This is New Media Beat on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Stephanie Casella.
And I am Jalal McCoy. We have media news from seven nations today: Italy, South Korea, Somalia, Gaza and Israel, Japan, and Cambodia.
From Italy, what's on the radio?
How popular is radio in Italy? Who's still listening? Have some Italians have turned off their radios and gone online?
From South Korea, the home of K-pop.
What's new in K-pop? Do you have to be Korean to be a K-pop star? The stars of Black Swan are proving that you don't have to be Korean to sing K-pop. Is everyone happy with that? What do the fans think?
From Somalia, women in media.
Times are tough in Somalia. There is hunger and violence. How hard is it to be a female journalist in Somalia? Are women journalists still working amidst all the conflicts and insecurity? Are women's voices being heard in Somalia media?
From Gaza and Israel.
Is the war in Gaza an information war? What is an information war? Is this about misinformation and disinformation on social media?
From Japan, let's talk manga.
Why are manga artists worried about a new tax law that requires disclosing their real names? Should creators be allowed to remain anonymous in Japan?
From Cambodia, is there a free press?
Is there still an independent press in Cambodia under the new government of Hun Manat? How low does Cambodia rank on the index of press freedom? Will Prime Minister Hun Manat treat the media better than his father Hun Sen?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Alyssa Rosano covers the Italian media for New Media Beat. This week, Alyssa has a report about radio in Italy. Are there a lot of radio stations in Italy? Do Italians spend a lot of time listening? How is the radio industry doing in this digital age? Have radio stations moved online and started streaming? Is this audience still listening? Alyssa, how big is the radio audience in Italy? Is radio popular?
The answer is yes. Around 2,500 commercial radio stations broadcast in Italy. Some have national coverage and most are music-based. They share airwaves with public broadcast networks.
Do Italians spend a lot of time listening? How is the radio station doing in a digital age?
So the most popular radio channel was reported to be RTL 102.5. Listeners are still listening to these and they enjoy different genres and news programs with weather and traffic information. The most popular radio would be the RTL 102.5 with over 7 million daily listeners. RDS follows in the ranking with 5 million.
What does the radio audience look like?
So the radio audience looks like the ages between they listen to are 45 and 54 years old. They tend to listen to radio more than other age groups. It's evenly spread among male and female Italians.
Is listening to the radio still popular these days, or are Italians using something else instead?
Like in European countries, most national radio channels broadcast through DAB, digital audio broadcasting technology, while FM radio is gradually leaving the national network stage. As far as technology used, listening to the radio on smartphones is increasing. Several radio networks reach and engage in online audiences through social network and other social media, including video platforms like YouTube. For New Media Beat, I am Alyssa Rosano. Back to you, Joel.
Thanks, Alyssa. Our K-pop correspondent is here in Studio A to share her latest K-pop update. If you want to know what's new in K-pop, ask my co-host Stephanie Casella. Stephanie, you have a report about a group called Black Swan. What makes Black Swan different from other K-pop groups?
Black Swan is a multinational K-pop group that's comprised of four girls who are not Korean. They represent diversity in the K-pop industry and are redefining what it means to be considered K-pop.
How did Black Swan become a non-Korean K-pop group?
Black Swan originally debuted in 2020 with Korean and not Korean members. The Korean members left in 2022. And now the group is made up of Fatou from Belgium, Surya from India, Gabby from Brazil, and Navi from the United States. And they are winning contestants in an audition program run by DR Music. This K-pop girl band has members from all over the world, which is fascinating and rare in the world of K-pop.
What challenges have they faced?
Language is one of the greatest challenges the members of Black Swan face, since K-pop idols have to speak and perform in Korean. So Korean has different speech forms depending on the listener's age and social status. And honorifics are key to the language. Koreans use honorifics to respect people who are older or have a higher status as part of their culture. And Gabby, one of the members, even says, you shouldn't use the name of a person or say you in Korean, but in Portuguese and English, you always use it in a sentence. So it was really hard for my brain to process. Some members still have difficulty speaking Korean due to the complexity of the honorifics. Also, the Black Swan members agree that dance practices are a major challenge as well. They have to participate in training all day, which is harsh and exhausting. Navi and the other members considered themselves to be exceptional dancers until they had to go through training, which was very strict and tedious. And the grueling training and extreme competitiveness have negatively affected the mental health of K-pop idols. This training has become very stressful. One of the members for Tao even says, dealing with mental stress was the most challenging part for me. And she suffered from depression symptoms since a young age. She says there are times when she asks herself, I can't dance, I can't rap, I can't sing. What am I doing?
How have fans reacted to Black Swan?
There has been a debate on whether Black Swan is a K-pop group or not. Black Swan considers itself an official K-pop girl group because these girls can sing in Korean. The fans seem to agree that the members' ethnicity, it doesn't matter as long as they can sing really well in Korean like they do in their latest comeback, Karma. They should be praised for their talent, hard work, and dedication instead of getting judged based on their ethnicity. Korean netizens have reacted very positively to Black Swan. Most of them agree that they are very good at rapping and singing in Korean, which makes them a K-pop band. For New Media Beat, I'm Stephanie Casella. Back to you, Joelle.
Thank you, Stephanie. Our next topic is a long way from South Korean K-pop. Let's turn to Somalia.
Deborah Flamenbaum is in Studio A with us today to talk about the difficulties of women journalists in Somalia. What are the obstacles that women journalists confront while trying to report the news in Somalia? There is a serious humanitarian crisis caused by the fighting between the government forces, clan militias, and Al-Shabaab. Hunger is a big problem. There are more than 4 million hungry people and 1.3 million displaced Somalians, according to United Nations News. Deborah, is there still a free press in Somalia reporting in news today?
No, Stephanie Casella, there is not a free press in Somalia reporting today because the government has put in laws in place to track what journalists can and cannot publish. However, there are journalists who do publish news illegally, and by doing that, they put themselves under threat. And only if you're not in Somalia can you get access to what they write.
How have women journalists been mistreated in Somalia?
Women journalists have suffered sexual harassment, offensive language, criticism for holding a job, and physical abuse while working in Somalia.
How has the world responded to women journalists?
The world has responded positively to women journalists. Many other nations have tried to help women journalists in Somalia gain training and access to be able to do their jobs. The Somalian government does hire certain women journalists if they meet the government criteria, but for the most part they're criticized because Somalia is a patriarchal society.
What are the issues that women journalists cover?
Women journalists cover a wide variety of issues, including HIV, domestic violence, and terrorist attacks.
Are the punishments for women who break the media laws the same as men?
Yes, they are. The punishments that women journalists in Somalia face are the same punishments that men would face if they broke the law.
Do women journalists support each other?
Yes, women journalists have organizations like BILA, which help provide training and support to other women journalists wanting to learn the trade. For example, they teach women how to do radio shows, how to write a report, and provide safety training classes so they can help keep themselves safe. They also mentor each other. For New Media Beat, I'm Deborah Flambaum. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thanks, Deborah. What is the role of the media in the Israeli-Palestine war in Gaza? Is this war also an information war? What do we mean by information war in this context? It is time to talk about the media war in Gaza with my co-host, Jalal McCoy. There is a brutal war and a humanitarian crisis happening in Gaza. At least 10,000 Gazans have been killed on the Gaza Strip, which is under attack by the Israeli military. At least 1,400 Israelis were killed in the Hamas attack on October 7th. Can we understand what is happening in Gaza? How well is the international media doing with its coverage of the conflict in Gaza? Are people who get their news through social media platforms getting the facts? Or is there a lot of misinformation and disinformation on social media? Jalal McCoy has been paying attention. Jalal, is there a lot of misinformation coming out of Gaza on social media? Let's begin with some simple terms. Why are you using the term misinformation and not disinformation? What's the difference, and how does that relate to what we are seeing online about the war in Gaza?
Well, the big difference between misinformation and disinformation, well, misinformation is when someone shares information and not knowing that the information can be incorrect or is partially incorrect. Disinformation is purposefully putting out information that is purposely putting out information knowing that it is incorrect in order to deceive the masses.
What impact has the Israel-Gaza conflict had on social media?
So the traumatic events between Gaza and Israel has sparked a ton of controversy, especially on social media. Social media sites like X, formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok has been bombarded with tons of news and information and videos. And unfortunately, a lot of misinformation has been spread across these platforms, which has caused major division.
What are some examples of misinformation?
So one incident that occurred during this conflict was the bombing of a hospital in Gaza. There were multiple reports about the incident. However, the cause of the hospital blast was unclear. Palestine blamed Israel for the airstrike, yet Israel claimed that the blast was a failed rocket from Hamas. Many people were choosing sides, which caused protests and heated debates online and in person. There were also reports of, with Palestine claiming that there were over 500 fatalities. However, it was later reported that the death toll was estimated to be between 100 to 300. It was also discovered that the blast actually went off in a nearby parking lot and not the hospital itself.
Is there a solution to dealing with misinformation online?
Well, for one, this isn't an easy fix. So although it may be a quick and easy method to share and retain information online, it is also a flawed method due to the fact that we are currently living in an age where most people do not read past the headlines. While on the other hand, any single individual has ability to easily and strategically manipulate info, especially with our current technology with like Photoshop and access to AI. People then can share these things on social media in order to deceive the masses into following a certain narrative. So in terms of solution, one thing would be censorship, but however, I am against censorship due to the fact that it is an infringement on free speech. So it is a very, very slippery slope. For New Media Beat, I'm Jalal McCoy. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Jalal. Up next, we have media news about manga. Should manga artists be allowed to remain anonymous? What would happen if everyone knew their names? Could that be dangerous?
Many Japanese artists and content creators are nervous about this new tax law. Ryan, why are many manga artists afraid of the consequences of this new tax law? Is this about paying taxes, or is there another concern?
So one of the other concerns for this new law is mainly having to do with identities, because a lot of VTubers and content creators and manga artists like to remain more anonymous than give out their name and be in like the public spotlight.
So what is the purpose of this new law?
So one of the main purposes of the law was to essentially increase taxes for both residents of Japan and non-residents of Japan. This is a big deal mainly for people that are out of Japan who came there for being like voice actors, anything sort of like that. it basically affects a lot of like pop culture there, such as like animators, filmmakers, voice actors, manga artists, VTubers. And not only does it have to do with a lot more taxes and taking more money away from them in a industry that's already more or less very, very competitive, it also threatens to basically give out their identities.
So how does this affect the manga artists?
So this affects the manga artists mainly in the sense of giving out their identities, because with this law you have to register with certain companies, and these companies are basically going to give out more and more of your identity. And aside from that, it's going to be also real name, where you live, and stuff like that. And it's basically a very revealing law for anyone that wants to remain anonymous. And a lot of backlash for it, for at least manga artists, come from a lot of fans of like certain manga series, like some of the popular ones, My Hero Academia by Kohei Hirokoshi and Chainsaw Man's Tatsuki Fujimoto, who have been out of the spotlight for years, are now just going to be suddenly thrown out there. A lot of fans of these have very strong opinions and have a lot of the time sent a lot of death threats to the companies that put out the manga, and then death threats directly to the creators.
How does this affect the VTubers?
So this greatly affects VTubers more than anyone else, because the point of a VTuber is to be solely anonymous and represent yourself through a digital avatar, so that we have a face to put to the voice. And a lot of big VTuber companies in Japan tend to go as far as, like, if you were a content creator before, they will have you delete basically any and all record of you being on the internet. Basically really pushing like the anonymity of it. And in the case of Japan, a lot of VTubers tend to fall under what's called an idol, which more or less is like a pop musician in the US. They're really held to like a lot of really high standards for like being in character, being in constantly happy, all stuff like that. And the idol community in Japan is, like, very, very toxic, too. To the point of, basically, if you're a female, you're not allowed to talk to any guys. And despite being a virtual thing like a VTuber, they're held basically to the same sort of standards, to the point of where if you're seen talking to a guy or you accidentally release, like, DMs or anything like that, you can very easily be canceled and very quickly be canceled for that. Even if it's not in the form of a romantic sense. A big part of also being a VTuber is forming like parasocial relationships between the VTuber and the viewer. And there have been some cases where viewers have firmly believed that they were in relationships with the VTuber and have tried to like stalk them and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a big threat to their safety, if you want to look at it that way. And obviously with real names and addresses being put out there, it's a very big safety concern for them.
So how do the fans feel about this?
Well, a lot of the fans are obviously going to be very concerned for the safety of the creators and the VTubers. Because not in the sense of they'll only be losing money in a competitive field, but it really does remove like this whole barrier of protection that they used to have. And it's gone as far as people in the U.S., out of the U.S., have gone and made a change.org petition that has up to, I believe, now 500,000 signatures to try and reverse this. But that failed, unfortunately. And, yeah, that sort of protection barrier that they had is essentially gone. For New Media Beat, I'm Ryan Geaton. Back to you, Jalal.
Thank you, Ryan. Let's talk about press freedom in Cambodia with Elijah Bailey. What role does the state play in Cambodian media affairs? Who owns the media in Cambodia? Is there an independent press, or has the government captured the media? What do we need to know about the government of Cambodia to make sense of the role of the press and press freedom. Who is the new Prime Minister Hun Manet? Who is his father? The former Prime Minister Hun Sen. What the ruling Cambodian People's Party, or CPP, dominates the government in Cambodia? Does the CPP also dominate the media? Elijah, was there press freedom in Cambodia when Hun Sen was the Prime Minister for almost 37 years, from 1985 to August of 2023?
Hi, Jalal. Thank you. There actually has not been independent media press in Cambodia under the ruling of Hun Sen. He has been seen controlling media and shutting it down, like in recently and before August, the August election, where we got the Prime Minister Hun Manet. Independent media outlets, which is like one of the last ones in Cambodia, Voice of Democracy, had covered on the story about how Hun Manet was getting into office and how he would only be a tool from Hun Sen, and it would kind of be Hun Sen trying to use his son to stay in ruling. After that, Hun Sen canceled the license of VOD, or the Voice of Democracy, and it just shows how typically how it's ran in Cambodia, where the government has allowed to have dealings with independent media and taking away their license to promote and to broadcast. A lot of media in Cambodia is government controlled, where it's fixed on what is given to a lot of the people.
So what is happening with independent press in Cambodia?
It is being taken away if it doesn't match what the government kind of wants Cambodian people to be interested into. This leaves like a lot of Cambodian people to find their media through Facebook and other social media platforms, and they kind of don't rely on the media they have within the country.
Okay, so why is Hun Manet blocking independent press in Cambodia?
Hun Manet blocking press comes straight from the previous ruling of his father, and his father kept tight control, just like I said, of how the media and how the people of Cambodia see him or view him and his family, which definitely plays a part into his 37-year run as Prime Minister of Cambodia.
Interesting. So is Hun Manet controlling any other forms of media in Cambodia?
He has been seen blocking social media ads and restricting them and restricting certain platforms to have different restrictions that if they don't match or have harshful rhetoric of any kind that he doesn't agree with. So he has hands in the independent media and also social media.
Okay, so how is the lack of independent press and freedom of press in Cambodia affecting the people that live there?
It's affecting them by them not being able to have accurate media source that's not controlled by the government, and they're not being only fed a certain narrative. And it's affecting them that way they have to go to social media, where there is more access to not real news that they are relying on more than the news that comes within their country. For New Media Beat, I'm Elijah Bailey. Back to you, Jalal.
Thank you, Elijah. That's all for this week.
Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our co-producers, Alex Heichel, Demetra Kilton, and Coda Werner. Our engineer is Demetra Kilton. My co-host is Jalal McCoy. Thanks, Jalal.
Thanks, Stephanie. Today we heard reports from Stephanie Casella, myself, Elijah Bailey, Alyssa Rosano, Deborah Flamenbon, and Ryan Gaten.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR All Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at All Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next up on OWWR Old Westbury Radio.